This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your round one recap for this week's Genesis Invitational. But boy, there is news to go along with that leaderboard. Joining me to break it all down, Kyle Porter is here. KP, I'm clearly on the road, so apologies for audio video. Good to have you, my man.
Well, you were still earlier than me. So you drove through LA traffic, you walked around Riviera, and you still somehow made it to the podcast before I did. So congrats on that.
I'm 3.5 miles away from Riviera. It took me an hour in an Uber to get here.
That's expensive.
Absurd. Yes. Expensive and absurd is what that is.
How was Riv today?
It's awesome. I mean, it's just
so cool.
It's so cool. It's so good. The sight lines are amazing. It's much more intimate than I think people realize. It's hard. It's everything.
So two questions. One, it didn't look like there were a ton of fans out there. Now, I paid more attention to that early, and there just wasn't that many following the feature groups. And then two, were the greens as bouncy as it seemed like they were on TV?
Yeah, so it definitely got more crowded as the day went on, but they were very much concentrated on like two groups, and the rest of it was wide open. A lot of big bounces. It wasn't like that all day long. There were a couple of shots that I saw, like Tony Finau hit into, it would be like five, where he was waiting for the bounce and it just sat right down. It was still a little, not wet, but it was still a little soft in the morning. But my goodness, they were definitely bouncy towards the end of the day. Yeah, big time.
Well, and it just, man, I saw you did a great job with Sam Burns on Wednesday. Thank you. He was great, but the like talking about fast and firm, it just makes the tournament feel different. Even like I think about this with even like Bay Hill, think about how fast and firm Bay Hill has been over the last whatever 2-3 years when they don't get rain. And even though that field is not, I mean, Riviera feels different because you're like, this field's like the Masters basically, but Bay Hill even can feel different just because of the way the ball is bouncing around. You're like, oh, this is like real. Like this is like a legit big time professional golf event. And I don't know, that gets me excited. I mean, this, we'll talk about the board in a minute, but this, I watched it all day. I never watch everything all day. I was, first Keegan Bradley to, whoever's still playing. I just watched the whole thing and it was just a ton of fun.
Firm, fast greens, the anticipation of like that second bounce and like, is it going to spin? Like, is it going to grab? What's it going to do here? Like, I love that moment. The anticipation between bounce one and bounce two.
Well, and guys couldn't hold, what was it, this six or seven? Like, whatever the one.
Seven's pretty tough, yeah.
I think it was seven where Rory hit it all the way over and down the hill. And it just makes tough golf courses world class. And it produces leaderboards like this, honestly. It produces the guys that are hitting it the best, so it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're gonna get to that leaderboard. We'll get to the odds in just a second, but the Saudi League is heating up, and Phil Mickelson is saying things, and when you've got a potential breakoff league, I think you gotta cover it, KP. So here's what we've got going on. Alan Shipnuck working on a new book, and has seemingly Phil Mickelson on the record here in a phone call where he reveals quite a bit. And I think I just have to read you the whole quote here.
Please,
and then we
please
can
do. Please do.
Then we can just go through it because it's quite a lot. So here we go. He says, quote, this is Phil. they're scary mother truckers. He used the real word to get involved with. We know they kill.
Talking about the Saudis, not the PGA Tour.
Correct. Phil goes on to say, we know they killed Khashoggi and have a horrible record on human rights. They execute people over there for being gay. Knowing all of this, why would I even consider it? Because this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to reshape how the PGA Tour operates. They've been able to get by with manipulative, coercive, strong-arm tactics because we, the players, have no recourse. As nice a guy as Jay Monahan, PGA Tour Commissioner, comes across as, unless you have leverage, he won't do what's right. And the Saudi money has finally given us that leverage. I'm not sure I even want it to succeed, but just the idea of it allowing us to get things done with the PGA Tour, end quote.
I don't even know where to start.
I triple checked that this was a real, like, source story. This was it was so outlandish. I thought it was, what's the parody site? The Onion. I thought it was The Onion.
I was putting together a tweet. I'd never sent it out, but like, if you pitch this on SNL, people would, it'd be like, that's dumb. It's like too much parody, right? And so we're going to talk about this quote a lot. I do want to note later on, he calls the PGA Tour a dictatorship.
Mm. Yeah.
Which, what exactly do you, like, to like, what do you think you're getting into, right? Like, you think that there's just free reign with the Saudis? Like, you can just do whatever you want. You just, Charlie Hoffman, my ball rolled in, but it really didn't. I'm going to just, it's almost like beyond belief. I was talking with some of our editors today. I was like, this is true. Like, we say things are unbelievable all the time. This is truly beyond, like, my comprehension, like believability. I don't
even know what to say about it. Like, what's the part to you that sticks out the most? This part where one side of the scale is murdering a reporter, executing people for being gay, and on the other side, well, now we have leverage with the PGA Tour, and Phil's going, I don't know, that's pretty close. Like, the weights on both sides feel pretty even. That's the most outrageous part.
Yeah, I think and to go along, that's sort of it for me also. I think my biggest thing is that Phil is like, so read the part, actually, we pull it up again, producer Jacob, because he says something right before he says, I want to do this to reform the PGA Tour. What is the part that he says there?
He says, because this is a once in a lifetime opportunity to reshape how the PGA Tour operates.
So he says, right before that, he says, why would I even consider it? And then he says, because this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. You just take that sentence out and replace it with, like, whatever his contract is. Because I'm getting X. Because, and this is the part that kind of bugs me, and a bunch of other people have talked about this as well. He's like making himself out to be like this martyr. Like, I tweeted this out. I love the PGA Tour so much that I'm willing to, the way he frames it, like, risk my life for its improvement, for our players. And you're like, is that really what's happening here? Because that is basically the way he is framing himself. And I just, I don't understand how I just don't understand how we live in a world where somebody like him could pit this charitable organization that's been the vehicle through which he's made probably $1 billion in his life against this foreign government that is incredibly hostile. And he literally says a murderous regime.
Yeah, it's not like he doesn't know.
And I just, going back to your point, I don't know how these two things ended up being like played against each other.
the cognitive dissonance is super strong with Phil in this situation. It's just like, okay, so let me, I want to pause for a second, because the argument that has been coming up a lot, Kyle, and I'm sure you've seen this as well, is, yeah, well, the U.S. government does bad things and all the governments in the world do bad things. Those people who say that are not as smart as they think they are, because right. This is not the United States government or luring athletes over here like it is the financial arm of the Saudi government trying to do this.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
Let's clear that up.
I tweeted that out during Phoenix. It's not, we're not hosting the WGC U.S. Treasury Open.
Right.
Right. Whereas we are, well, we are not, but the Saudi Arabia is hosting the Public Investment Fund Saudi Arabia Invitational. And the Public right. Investment Fund, if you're confused about this, and listen, I'm not going to try to like delve deep into Saudi Arabian politics, but it's effectively, and their government works much different than the U.S. government, but it's effectively the financial arm, the financial vehicle for the Saudi Arabian government. Now, again, like, you don't have like the U.S. treasurer handing out checks at the summit club for the CJ right. Cup. Whereas you do. I mean, that's what this whole thing is backed by. And it, like, is the crown prince like handing out money to winners of tournaments? No, but it ain't that many steps away. Right. Like it's not, I don't know. I'm so baffled by the entire thing. I had one other thought. Will you pull the quote back up, Jacob? It's just such an unbelievable quote. Where Phil says, "I'm not even sure I want the SGL to succeed." Okay, so that, like, if I read between the lines there, that actually says a lot, because it makes me wonder if this thing's even going down. Mm. Right? Because then he says, I was talking to somebody, I had coffee with somebody today. He's like, he said like all the quiet parts, like he screamed to them
right
out loud. And he says, just the idea of it is allowing us to get things done with the tour. So if I'm Phil, like, what's my move? Is my move to go back to the tour and be like, okay, what do you got for me? Is that going to work? Because if I'm Jay Monahan, Justin Thomas said this afterwards, he's like, fine, go do it. And if I'm Jay Monahan, I'm kind of saying, okay, you're going to take what, Adam Scott and Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood. Okay. I've got Morikawa and Rory and Rahm. And do you have a TV deal? Like, do you have,
yeah.
Are you going to get to play in May? Like, are you going to, if you feel, so do you do that? Do you go to the tour and be like, okay, can I have my media rights? Or do you go to the Saudis and say, okay, when's my tea time? 8:30 tea time? I know I just called you a murderous regime and said we know they kill people. What time am I teeing it up? And do they even care? And like, I just,
yeah, he's not really a reliable spokesperson for either side, is he?
I feel like I didn't get enough there, like, this did not get enough attention today. I didn't get enough texts about it. It didn't blow up enough on Twitter. This is these quotes are insane.
I pulled over to the side and I was like, am I reading what I think I'm reading like right now? So obviously, you know, Justin Thomas, you mentioned, gets asked about this. And we didn't even talk about the fact that apparently Phil Mickelson worked with other players to literally create the operating agreement, mm-hmm. hired the lawyers to create the operating agreement for the Saudi Super League. So when Justin Thomas was asked about it, he said, and I quote, seems like a little bit of a pretty, you know, egotistical statement. I don't know. It's like, he's done a lot of great things for the PGA Tour. It's a big reason it is where it is, but him and others that are very adamant about that, if they're that passionate, go ahead. I don't think anybody's stopping them.
I feel the same way. Like, it's not going to affect, like, I'm just going to continue to watch Riv, and then I'm going to continue to watch Bay Hill and the players. And listen, like, the PGA Tour is not perfect. You and I have been pretty adamant about, like, there are a number of things they could do differently, but this is not the path to get to those things. I'm very, very confident of that. And I just don't know, like, what does Phil want here? Like, does he just want more money? Does he want attention? Does he want to actually play golf? I feel a little conflicted because he won the PGA last year. And you're like, oh, that was like, I would feel a lot less conflicted if he hadn't won the PGA and hadn't really been relevant in like 7 years or whatever since 2016. So 6 years. But I feel a little bit of conflict because we're talking about a reigning major, one of the four reigning major champions. And you're like, okay, well, I don't know what he's like wanting. Like, I don't know what, like, is he just wanting money? Like, do you think that's it?
I think that's the biggest part of it. I think trying to, and I don't think he cares where he gets it from, whether it is leverage on the tour and you get it from the tour in some way, whether it is getting it from the Saudis, that's another story. I don't think he particularly cares where he gets it from. So yes, I do think it's a lot about money. And I also think a little bit that Phil is an agent of chaos. And I think he just wants to cause a little bit of drama. We might've lost KP there for a second. So I'm going to provide you with a little bit of other news before we hit our ad break here. Oh, there he is, KP.
Sorry, I just clicked a wrong. It's just my first time on the internet.
I've done that quite a bit. The other thing that I had to pull over to the side of the road for this morning was a pretty incredible video, and I don't use the word incredible in a positive manner, of the Oakland Hills clubhouse literally burning to the ground. I mean, this was a roaring fire. Luckily, no injuries. Yeah, there's producer Jacob, if you're watching on YouTube, has kind of the aftermath as the firefighters have arrived. Significant damage, luckily no injuries, but this is, you know, this is a staple in our game. It's been around for over 100 years. It's hosted major championships, and it's just, you know, something you obviously never want to see, but luckily no injuries.
Yeah, it was sad. I mean, I think that, you know, so much of, you know, I think golf is fairly unique. I'm trying to think of other, maybe tennis would be a little bit like this, but I think golf is fairly unique in that, like, when you think about historical artifacts or documents or whatever in baseball, you just think of Cooperstown. You don't think of each individual stadium, right?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
Now maybe they have some stuff, but when you think of that in football, you think of Canton. When you think of it in basketball, you think of, where's the Basketball Hall of Fame?
Springfield, Massachusetts.
There you go. So you think of those places, and golf is unique in that, like, you have, there's no, I mean, there is a Hall of Fame, but it's not, it doesn't house like all the stuff. Instead, you've got stuff at, I don't know why Valhalla is the first place I thought of, but like Augusta and, Southern Hills and Oakland Hill, like all these places that have hosted, you know, major championships and huge events, and they have the memorabilia and just like all the stuff from that. So each place tells its own individual story, which is cool, which is unique to golf. So it's a huge bummer to, obviously for anything like this to ever happen. But in golf, I think it's almost more, devastating, if you will, to the history of the game than it would be in other sports.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That's a good way to look at it. It's kind of more spread out than most other sports.
Totally.
All right, let's dive into round one at Riviera. We'll look at the leaderboard. We'll look at the odds. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Robert Half Research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
And we're back. We've got a leaderboard shaping up at Riviera. So just to be clear, as we are live right now, we still have a hole and a half, a couple holes to play for some of these guys. Our leader is one of them, Joaquin Niemann, 8 under par, and he's got a half a hole to play. He's sitting in the fairway, sitting pretty on his final hole of the day. It's number 9 because he started on the back, but I see... Oh boy, I see 9 birdies and a bogey on this card from Joaquin Neiman, who played well at Farmers, you know, kind of limped down the finish line of last year, KP, but maybe a new year, a little bit of a reset button is exactly what he needed.
Yeah, it's 9 birdies at Riviera is filthy.
That's disgusting.
Through 17 holes. It makes sense. He's obviously a super talented ball striker, just moves the ball around a ton. So fun to watch. I'm almost surprised, and maybe I've just overvalued him. I'm kind of surprised that he hasn't. Where was it that he continued or that he contended? Was it Olympia Fields, the BMW, where he was kind of in it?
Oh, see, I only ever think of when he posted at he went nuts on Sunday and posted at like Heritage, and then everybody caught up to him. That's the only thing I ever think of. You might be right about that, though. Yeah, that feels like it could be right.
The BMW. Yeah, he finished. Okay, so I got the BMW right here. Rom, that was the Rom DJ playoff.
Oh, got it. Okay, yep.
Hideki and Neiman finished T3. They were both 2 under, and Neiman shot 3 under on Sunday. And there was only 5 guys in that field that were under par. Tony Finau was the other one. So, I guess my point is it feels to me like he should show up actually at more places like Riviera, like the fast and firm places, because of the way he hits the golf ball. And he's had a good career. I mean, he's been good, but he hasn't had that Riviera week where you're like, oh, Joaquin Neiman, like, yikes. Yeah. Like, he is terrifying.
And he won early, right? He won and he was like 19, and we got all the stats that were like, the last 5 internationals to win at this age were Rory McIlroy, Seve Ballesteros, and Joaquin Neiman. Like, those were all the stats, right? So I felt like expectations were quite large, still very young. Maybe we expected too much too soon.
Yeah, maybe, but like, it's hard not to, right?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, that's kind of the whole point.
That's what we do.
Well, it's the whole point of like, when you're that good, that and it was the way he was doing it. It's not like he got, I mean, I don't know the stats from his, or where is he won? Was it just
Greenbrier, right?
Greenbrier.
I'm almost positive about it. I'm like 99.9% sure.
Then he lost in the playoff at, Sony or Tournament of Champions? What was it? It was Harris English, right? Tournament.
It was Tournament of Champions because he was eating with Sergio.
That's right.
Oh my God.
That was a, that was a circus.
So good.
I forgot what my point was. Just that he, like, the way he did it, the way he's done it, you think like elite ball striker, 19 years old, and like immediately your vision of his trajectory is just skyrocket, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And so it hasn't necessarily played out like that, which doesn't mean it's not going to. It's just, it's those expectations in the way that he did it early on just get really, really high.
Caesar Sportsbook has him at 4-1 to win the Genesis Invitational. He is, I'm just checking to see if he has hit his second shot yet. He has not, into number 9, his final hole of the day. 2 guys right behind Joaquin Neiman in the betting odds. Justin Thomas and Scottie Scheffler are 9-1. Let's start with Scottie Scheffler, KP, because his first round since becoming a PGA Tour winner was a 5-under round of 60. What would that be? 32 and 34, 66 around Riviera, right back at it. No time off.
Yeah, which is pretty impressive. I mean,
yeah,
that group of him, Spieth, and Rahm was super entertaining. He didn't hit the ball that great off the tee, which he kind of talked about afterward. Listen, like, I think Scottie Scheffler's good enough to win Phoenix and Riviera, but man, that's a tough ask. Like, I just think he even talked about how after his round, he's like, listen, I'm kind of worn out. Like, I had a hard time getting going this morning. And then he shot 66. I don't know if he can maintain that energy throughout the weekend with the kind of leaderboard that we're going to have over the next 3 days.
Yeah, because they're lining up behind. I mean, Max Homa in his title defense, he's currently 5 under par. So at this exact moment, that is 3 shots off the lead. I watched him chip in for eagle at 10. That was kind of cool. Jordan Spieth is right there at 5 under par. And Spieth is so interesting around a place like this, KP. And we talk about this all the time. You know, the creativity, the ability to kind of work a little bit of short game magic. And as long as he keeps it in play, it's a fairly good place for him.
Yeah, it is. I'm looking at his numbers right now. He putted, he hit his approach shots better than he did at Phoenix, right? Like, he just wasn't very good from well, what was he in Phoenix? Let me pull it out.
I don't have it in front of me. I'm working from a tablet. You're going to have to help me on this one.
Yeah, that's a tough scene. Hold on, I got it right here. So Phoenix last week, he was okay tee to green, and then bad putting and around the green. But he usually okay for him. That's not very good from tee to green. So he was better on Thursday, and he's had success. Yeah, like you said, at Riviera before. So not, I don't know, not a huge surprise. I feel like the worse it's begun to look, like he's doing that. I don't know if you followed him, that weird
So bad.
Backswing, and then he comes around it, and there still seems to be just a ton going on. But he flushes it. I mean, I feel like even watching now, I have so much more confidence in the driver than what this time 13 months ago.
You know what I noticed? I did follow him for quite some time. And don't quote me on this, but I didn't see him hit all that many drivers. You know, there's a lot of holes you can get away with not driver at Riviera. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is pretty, pretty beneficial to him.
Yeah, for sure. But when he has control of driver, it doesn't look good, but it feels great. Yeah. Like even Augusta last year, he putted terribly, but like every driver was just pure. And you're like, I don't really get it, but it's working. And that's, you know, what was his note? Yeah, he was plus off the tee. Not great, but not terrible. The guy that, like, on the odds that I love is, and I probably shouldn't, I just continue to fall in love with him, is JT.
Yeah, lottery 9-1 for JT at Caesars Sportsbook. So he shot a 4 under round. So at this exact moment, that's 4 back. But Neiman kind of separating himself. He's only JT only 1 back from second place. John Rahm kind of salvaged his day at the end. He birdied 2 of his last 3. He's 12-1. Spieth is 12-1. If I didn't mention that, and Morikawa is 10-1. So KP, it's just shaping up to be, a horse race. There's just the guys are there.
Well, it is funny because you talk about, you know, kind of these dividing lines from the PGA Tour and the Saudi deal. And it's like, who's on the PGA Tour side? Oh, everybody on this board. I mean, Jay Monahan has to be just like delighted over what is unfolding at Riviera right now. Rahm and JT, by the way, second and third strokes gained tee to green. And Rahm was second to last in putting. Not good. And JT didn't make anything either. His putting, it's gotta be, I mean, if you're him, it's gotta be so frustrating. Like,
it's just Groundhog's Day every day.
To hit it like he does and then just to not make anything. I mean, and I listened to him afterwards. He's like, I just need to see something go in. And you're like, it's almost like Steph Curry, where it's like, I see one go in, everything's going in. And that might not happen, but it does feel that way with him sometimes.
All right, KP. Well, we are in store for a great week of golf. And of course, the First Cut will be back after each and every round to break it all down. But for now, big thanks to producer Jacob doing all the hard work behind the scenes. That right there, that's Kyle Porter. He is not only our trivia champ, but you can find him on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. Somebody asked why there was a trophy next to your name on YouTube. And we had to be like, yeah, he's the champ. He's the trivia champ.
Yeah.
Unified. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been the First Cut, and we'll get you next time.
A Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.